Thank you all. It is indeed a small world that we live in. When a volcano in Iceland can mess up travel plans for somebody coming from South Africa. My return was through Amsterdam on Sunday night, and I learned that my flight was canceled, and they told me the next possible flight out for me through Amsterdam was going to be April 27th. So then they rerouted me through Johannesburg, then Sao Paulo in Brazil. I took off from there last night and got into O'Hare about 6:30 this morning. One of my bags didn't make it, which is what hung me up there. So I just had time to get upstairs and take a shower and to get into a suit. So I'm delighted to be here today and delighted to be here for this conference. I really wouldn't have missed this for the world. I've been looking forward to this for so long. And what I'd like to do today to kick off this conference is to tell you a little bit about a project that we've been working on, I and the coordinating committee for this conference, that we've been working on in preparation for this. I'd give you a sense of the project goals. We thought it would be useful if we collectively, you, all of us here, collectively try to develop a bit of a roadmap of what a comprehensive research agenda for a science of team science might look like. We thought that would be certainly helpful for us here at this conference, and perhaps, if it's not too presumptuous of us, it would also be something that might be of help for the field and to help inform the field. And so what we thought we would do is to use a team science methodology to map out the issues in team science. And the team science methodology that we used, not surprisingly, since I had my hands in on this, is a methodology that I developed in the 1980s that is a form of concept mapping. It is a mixed methods approach. That is, it uses quantitative and qualitative information. I'm going to show you how we did this project. It integrates group process kinds of steps, things that we're familiar with from standard, you know, newsprint on the wall sessions, the kind of brainstorming and sorting and so on of ideas. But it also integrates that with an engine that's got several very sophisticated hierarchical multivariate analyses inside. And I'll explain that to you in a bit. It used web technology, so we were able to do this in a distributed fashion. And we hope that it provides a rigorous and certainly visually interpretable result. We're dealing with maps here. We're actually trying to develop empirically founded maps of the basic agenda for a science of team science. So that's what we decided to try and do in advance of this conference. We thought, what a nice thing to do for a team science conference is actually to use a team science methodology with the people who are going to be attending the conference. So I don't know how many of you actually took part in this. I know you're all very busy people, but you all should have been invited to take part in this. And I'm going to explain how this process worked to begin with. First of all mapping processes of this type, we begin by defining the focus for the process. The concept mapping steering committee, who I'll introduce at the end of the talk, and I came up with this hardly focused statement. It's a very broad focus. Sometimes a focus can be broad. The focus was one topic that should be part of a comprehensive research agenda for the science of team science is ... this is actually a focus prompt, and the idea here is that that the brainstorming participants, that is you folks, should be able to generate multiple statements that complete that sentence. And so presumably all of the statements that were brainstormed complete that sentence. And we also, the steering committee identified who the participants for this process would be. All of the invitees to the conference were asked to brainstorm and rate. Now, I don't know, Holly, it was about 850 were asked to. 63 actually completed ratings, which is a good measure of how busy this crowd is and how challenging web-based team science approaches are going to be for all of us. And we limited the sorting task, which is really a bit of a demanding task. It takes about 40, 45 minutes. We knew it was hopeless to try and ask 840 of you to do the sort. So we limited it to the steering committee for the conference, and 15 steering committee members ultimately sorted the statements. We had 240 statements that were brainstormed, and just to give you a sense of what these statements looked like, I've included four of them as examples along the left-hand side. We synthesized these statements down to a final set, because 240 is far too many for people to process. And so we do a type of content analysis in order to synthesize, without losing any key meaning if we can, down to a final set of 95 statements. So the kinds of statements we had were, in no particular order, using publication and bibliometric data to assess team science, the importance of developing multi-method strategies to assess processes and outcomes of team science, how to evaluate success of team science-based research centers, measuring effectiveness of team science on multiple levels, individual team, impact of research, effectiveness of team science funding programs, et cetera. These are the kinds of statements that we got in the 240. Some of the statements that you'll see of the 95 are actually synthetic ones. That is, we combined near identical statements into the final 95. One of the key points of data collection in this process is when we ask the participants to do a sorting of those 95 ideas and a rating of them. As I mentioned, we limited the sorting to the steering committee for the conference. And this sorting is what we refer to as an unstructured sort. That is, we ask each person to take the 95 statements, pile them into piles of statements that make sense to them, and they can have as many or as few piles as they think make sense. So, you know, some people are what we call lumpers, and some people are what we call splitters. So we expect that we're going to get a little bit of that in the sorting. The other main task that 65 or so of you completed was to rate the relative importance of this. Now, we believe that if people brainstorm these things, they're all, to some extent, important. So we're really looking at relative importance, and we used a Likert-type response format, a 1 to 5 rating, where 1 meant, compared to all the rest of the statements, this is relatively unimportant, and a 5 meant, compared to all the rest, this is extremely important. So it's a relative kind of statement. You know, one more thing about the sorting, because we had 15 people do the sorting, I think I would consider this map that we developed here more akin to a focus group, a kind of a structured, quantitatively oriented focus group than a survey in a methodology, whereas the rating really constitutes more of a purposive sampled survey if you're looking for comparable kinds of methodologies to think about. We then take that input and we aggregate the sort data. I'm not going to show you the details of this, but it's well documented in the literature. We then do the key analysis that produces the original maps, and that's a multidimensional scaling analysis. Multidimensional scaling, in case you're not familiar with it, is a multivariate analysis, actually very underappreciated and undertaught in our graduate curricula. It's a very powerful way of looking at things. For those of you who are familiar with multivariate methods, it's sort of in the family of factor analysis, principal components analysis, and so on. We then take the results of the multidimensional scaling, feed that into hierarchical cluster analysis in order to give us partitions. And the kinds of pictures we get are the kinds of things you see here on the left, which we then have to interpret. I know this is really kind of amazing. I'm laying this on you first thing in the morning of a conference like this. This is fairly technical stuff, but we'll get through that into something that we hope is interpretable. So we then interpret the maps. And we usually like to do this with a broad cross-section of the participants. We weren't able to do that in advance of this conference. We actually had the steering committee work with us on the interpretation. But I'm hoping that over the next 2 days, you'll all sort of contribute your thoughts about whether our interpretation made sense or not. And then we want to use the maps. And as I mentioned, we hope that these maps will be at least illuminative and help us to think about the complex range of issues that we're going to be dealing with here in the next 2 days. But we also hope that maybe this makes a first stab at a decent taxonomy of the issues that would underlie an agenda for team science going forward. So we're hoping both of those things will be uses of this map. So, who participated? Just to give you a quick idea of who our participants looked like, this is the combination of raters and sorters. All of the sorters also rated, so it really is everybody who rated. We had about equal numbers of female and male, slightly more females than males. In terms of education, the vast majority had a doctorate or equivalent, 82% of our respondents, and 11 of the 62 respondents had a master's or bachelor's degree. In terms of academic disciplines, we really kind of had a bimodal distribution here. We had about a quarter of our respondents in the biomedical science area and about 38%, the largest percentage, in the social sciences. In terms of employment, by far, the majority came from academics or education. The next largest group, about 17%, came from government. We asked a question about the focus of your involvement in team science. I thought it was kind of an interesting question. Are you primarily a team science practitioner or primarily a team science scientist? That is, do you primarily work on creating better scientific teams, or do you primarily work on doing research about scientific teams? And we found that we've got a nearly even split, slightly more saying they were into the science of team science than into the practice of team science. We also asked about how much experience respondents had with teams over the past year, and found that about 30% said that they had worked with 3 to 5 teams. Nearly half said that they had worked with more than 5 teams. I think it was over the past year. I'm not sure I'm remembering the exact question, but I think that's what it was. So people have a lot of experience working with teams. Our sample had a lot of that. And then we asked how many years of professional experience you've had, and it ranged from 1 to 40, so we've got a pretty broad sampling of professional experience. We'll then later on split that at the median and take a look at the high and low experience people to see if there's any differences there. So that's who we had participating. How do we obtain the results? Well, here's what came out of the multidimensional scaling. What you see here is all of the 95 ideas arrayed in space, in this case in two-dimensional space. The key thing to realize about this kind of map is that ideas that are closer together are more similar to each other. How do we know that? That's because more people sorted them together with each other. Ideas that are farther apart were sorted together less frequently or not at all by the people who did the sorting. So it's only the sorting that contributes to this multidimensional scaling map. And just to give you an idea of where things wound up, down here in the southeast of the map, we had a statement. In this case, the ID number was number 6, and the statement was heterogeneity of team membership. So that's what was down there in the lower right. And right next to it, 2 other statements. Since they're next to that statement, these statements should be kind of similar in nature. And these statements were status differences and power dynamics within the team and team member interchangeability. So those are all in the same vicinity, and they should sort of be similar to one another. If you go way across the map, you look way up in the northeast, for instance, you see a statement, evaluating and learning from successful teams, which, because it's way across the map from the statements I initially showed you, should be really distinct from them. And I think it is. And then on the lower left, on the lower left, we had 2 statements, co-authorship and multi-PI authorship in team science, and the use of collaborative computerized tools to support and enhance team science. And again, those should be distinguishable from the ones in the southeast. So again, the key thing about this map is it's a relational map. It doesn't really matter what stuff is on the bottom or the top or the left or the right. You could take this map and rotate it clockwise or counterclockwise, any number of degrees. You could flip it horizontally, flip it vertically, and the points would still stay relatively in the same interrelationship to each other. So that's the kind of map we're dealing with. When we overlay a hierarchical cluster analysis onto that map, we get something that looks like this. In this case, we did the analysis and decided that a 7-cluster solution looked like a reasonable solution. And this is the way the clusters actually partition that multidimensional space. So one of the key issues we're going to have to do is figure out what are these clumps of ideas to be called. And one of the key interpretive tasks that we had to do was to come up with labels for these, much like for those of you who've dealt with factor analysis, we have to do in that context when we're labeling factors. You know, we're trying to name factors. So very much akin to that. So let's go through and take a look at what we had. Now, Holly, do we have the handouts?
Yes, everybody got it.
We have the infamous handouts. Okay. So the handouts, which somebody have one of those? You can. Just hold it up. So yeah, okay, that's it. You got them. They have the big blob on one side. Now, the other side, they actually have all of the statements in their clusters. So I'm not going to go through and perseverate on these statements right now. You can look at them in your own time. I'll just go through and give you sort of a feel of them. Notice, as I do a tour of the map here, a couple of things. It's really difficult for you to come into the middle of an interpretive map and if you don't spend a little time sort of thinking about what's in this stuff. I mean, the people who labeled this stuff did presumably do that. So if you're a little disoriented at first, that's not uncommon. You got to spend a little bit of time, a few moments, looking through each of these clusters. I'm going to start with the cluster at the top for no particular reason, and then work clockwise around and give you a tour of the map. The statements are listed in order, not in terms of their ID number. They were randomly sorted before they were assigned IDs. But they're listed based on some internal index of goodness of fit for that cluster, so that the first statement that's listed is the most central to the meaning of that cluster. The next is the next most central, and so on. So you give a little bit more weight to, when you're trying to come up with a label for a cluster, you give a little bit more weight to the earlier statements than to the later ones. The later ones are more likely to be bridging statements that might have been just as well placed in an adjacent cluster as they were in the cluster that's involved. But, you know, what we've got going here, if you stop and think about it, if you go back to this, we've got a meeting of two worldviews here in this map. The point map that I'm showing you here is a relational picture. It's like Buddhism. Everything in the universe is more or less related to everything else, right? And then Western Aristotelian thinkers come in and say, well, we're going to put it into bunches, into clusters. And so that's the Western kind of notion of taxonomy. So we're always going to have that struggle in this kind of interpretation of these maps between that relational structure and this taxonomic structure. And you can see that, for instance, because in every single cluster, there's going to be a point which is closer to statements in the next cluster over than it is to many of the statements in its own cluster. So just keep that in mind when we're interpreting these things. So starting at the top and moving around clockwise, the first cluster, which the interpretation group labeled Measurement and Evaluation of Team Science, had statements like using publication bibliometric data, the importance of developing multi-method strategies, how to evaluate success of team science research centers, effectiveness of team science on multiple levels, measurement of key constructs, research on methodology and measurement of team science, and that kind of stuff. And that wound up being geographically the largest cluster in the map, which means it's a broad range of ideas. It doesn't mean it's more important or less important. We'll come to the importance of these things a little bit later on. Second cluster, moving clockwise, is a cluster that the group labeled Structure and Context for Teams. Includes things like whether collaborative spaces encourage collaboration, the use of community-based organizations and community clinical practices in teams, what types of team organizations are best at facilitating team science, impact of team size, effects of the type and complexity of research question, and so on. And we thought of that as structure and context for teams. The third cluster in the southeast, I already showed you a couple statements from that cluster, includes things like status differences in power dynamics, team member interchangeability, how roles in teams are defined and communicated and by whom, influence of team research team morale, and so on. I hope as we're taking this tour on the map, you're also thinking about your own work, your own interests in team science, and where, if at all, your interests might be located. I suspect for many of you, if you're like me, your interests are going to be all over the map, but it's useful to get an idea of whether your interests or your research exist in specific geographic domains. At the very bottom of the map, in their approximate location of Texas, is the management and organization for teams. It includes things like value of rotating team leadership, the management of scientific teams, how to sustain teams, membership in multiple potentially conflicting teams, and so on. So managerial and organizational issues on the bottom. As you move to the southwest, you get to a cluster which we labeled Institutional Support and Professional Development for Teams. That includes issues like incentives and incentive systems, resources and infrastructure needed within and across institutions, how the university tenure and promotion system can be restructured to encourage team science, and topics like that. Moving to the West Coast, we come up with the cluster that we label Disciplinary Dynamics and Team Science. This is where most of the disciplinarity-related statements wound up. Things like variations in team science related to disciplinarity, how to overcome disciplinary traditions to move toward interdisciplinary ones, using team science and interdisciplinary research to support emerging areas of science, and so on. And finally, last but certainly not least, we come to a cluster which we labeled Definitions and Models of Team Science. includes things like theories and models, best practices, developing testable hypotheses, the definitions of team and team science, the definition of different types of disciplinarity. Interestingly enough, that statement right here, statement 15, is on the lower part of that cluster, right next to the cluster on disciplinarity. So it could probably have been placed in either one. It's a very theoretical, model-oriented kind of thing. It's getting at the definitions of disciplinarity, but it's also being pulled over towards that disciplinarity cluster. So that's the basic layout. If you look at it, sort of moving away from the trees and up to the forest now, we're looking at the cluster labels for those seven clusters, and here's what they look like. And one of the things that you're going to see if you start playing with this stuff is that not only do we have clusters of those individual statements, but sometimes we think that there are clusters of clusters or regions of this map. And so the group that did the interpretation speculated about what some of those regions might be, and I'll show you what those are now. For example, in the lower right of the map, they took a look at the two clusters that were there and said, you know, this stuff is sort of the quote-unquote nuts and bolts of team science. It's the structure, the context, the characteristics, dynamics of teams. It's really what's going on inside of teams. If you look at the two clusters out across the top, they really constitute sort of meta issues, or what the interpretation group thought of as meta issues. If you look at the whole swath across the middle, you've got the basic team stuff. That's where everything from disciplinarity to structure, context, characteristics, dynamics lives. And then on the south of the map, southwest of the map, you've got sort of the support system for this. I thought this is kind of interesting. I look at it almost like a team sandwich. All the team stuff in the middle, and on the top you've got sort of meta issues, theoretical issues, evaluative issues, and on the bottom you've got the support system. I was almost tempted to do like a pyramid, right, and divide each row of the three-row pyramid. I should have done this graph, but I ran out of time. Three-row pyramid on the bottom are the two clusters, institutional support, professional development, and management and organization. That's your foundation organizationally. Above that are your three clusters in the middle there, the disciplinarity, structure, context, characteristics, and dynamics. And then on the top are these two sort of meta clusters, the definitions and models, and measurement and evaluation. So I thought that's not a bad way to summarize a lot of complex material here. All of that is done based on the sorting that happened, and now we bring in the rating information. This map is probably uninterpretable. It's kind of cute to look at. Basically, it shows the average rating for each of the 95 statements in their clusters. Generally, you want to be looking at which clusters have more high bars than which have lower bars, but it's hard to see, and it's much better to average those averages. So when you take a look at the average of averages, you find that the highest average cluster is measurement and evaluation. Next to that is definitions and models of team science, and that the lower ones are the management and the characteristics down here. Now, I caution you on a couple of points here. First of all, I didn't bias this, even though my field is measurement and evaluation, although I was delighted to see that that wound up as high as it did. But the main thing to keep in mind is that all this stuff's important, that this is an attempt to try to get at some relative importance and some discrimination among these many statements. So clearly, measurement, evaluation, theoretical models, and so on are important to us, at least those who responded to the ratings, the 62 or 4 of you who did that. Just to give you an idea, the top 10, this is sort of a David Letterman-like list, the top 10 issues, although it's listed from the top one to the 10th one. I'm not going to perseverate on this either because it'll take too long to read through them. But not surprisingly, you're going to see the measurement evaluation stuff there. You're going to see some general statements like best practices of team science, which is, I think, in the theory and model cluster and so on. Well, one of the things we like to do with this kind of data is to take a look at how different subgroups saw the data. I'm not sure how well you'll be able to read this, but I can explain it to you. This is a graph that we refer to as a pattern match. It's a way to contrast two subgroups of our respondents in terms of their ratings of importance for those seven clusters. What's happening here is we have the females respondents on the left side. There's an axis there, vertical axis, and the male respondents on the right side. And this shows the relative importance. So one of these you can tell right at the outset, this top line here is the highest rated by both the females and the males, and that's the measurement and evaluation of team science. When you see big lines crossing over, that might suggest to you some discrepancy or difference between the groups. And here you see a really good example of that. The females had as their second highest average cluster institutional support and professional development for teams. And for the males, that was dead last. So I will let you speculate over the next 2 days as to what's going on here, but I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to do some of that speculation. And I think it's worth thinking about gender roles in relationship to teams. Right? This is an issue that I think we're going to need to spend a little time considering. When we look at people in terms of education, remembering that we had the vast majority of our respondents were doctorates, so I forgot to put the sample sizes here, but I believe there were only 11 with bachelor's or master's, and the rest were doctorate. But again, we see a major discrepancy, couple that might be worth at least noting. And let's just keep in mind throughout. I don't want to oversell this stuff as rigor. It's dependent entirely on who we got to participate. So we only had 60 some people. It was a survey. It was not a random sample. It was the people who were invited to this conference. So all those caveats that we all know so well have to be taken into account. But when you look at this, one thing that I found really kind of intriguing: those with doctorates thought that definitions and models of team science were second in importance on average, almost at the top, whereas for those with bachelor's and master's, it was dead last. And so this tells you a little bit, too, about what people are thinking about. And I think we're going to see a little bit more why that may be the case. I'm not sure. I think education in this sense is a correlate of something else. In terms of professional experience, we split the group at the median. I think it was about 17 years professional experience. What do the older, more experienced people think and the younger people think? So those below the median on the left-hand side and above the median on the right-hand side. About the only thing I'm seeing here is perhaps a little discrepancy around disciplinary dynamics and team science, which seem to be more important for those with less professional experience and less important for those with more. It's kind of an intriguing little finding. We might think about why that is the case. I think these pattern matches shouldn't be read as fact. They should be read as suggestive devices and stimulate perhaps some thought about what might be going on, perhaps stimulate some hypotheses that we could look at in more detail. We looked at employment sector. Remember, we only had two groups that were significant numbers, the academics and the government people. Actually, a fairly high relationship between them. 0.69 is the Pearson correlation down below. So it's fairly high. About the only thing I'd point out might be the structure and context for teams being less important in the academic context than it might be to the government people. That's kind of not too much of a surprise. I think the government is concerned with the structure and context for teams, especially as to how they might support them. So maybe that's what's going on here. In terms of that question about team science focus, I found this to be perhaps the most intriguing one. Remember, we asked people whether they were primarily team science practitioners or team science scientists. And this is the one that I think is correlated with education and so on. Those who were the practitioners thought that definitions and models of team science were dead last in importance. And those who were science of team science people thought that was the most important. So I think that tells you something about where people are coming from. If you're a practitioner, you're probably not too worried about the definitional stuff so on. If you're, however, doing science of this, you may have to be more aware of that. The other thing that's intriguing to me on this one is the institutional support. Not surprisingly, the practitioners saw that near the top in importance, and the science folks saw that near the bottom in importance. So it's really useful for us, I think, going into this conference to think about this, to think about the fact that we have multiple groups here with multiple stakeholders, with multiple interests that aren't always going to be the same. And that, as in all team endeavors, part of the challenge for us is how do we pull this stuff together? How am I doing here? Oh, okay. I will wrap this up. I'm not going to go show you these. These get even more convoluted And I didn't really see too much of interest there. That's a really nice scrambled scrambled thing to try to decipher first thing in the morning. I just included these to give you a sense that you can, in fact, look at multiple groups if you care to do so. You can really speculate all day long on this one, the academic discipline one, as you think about, well, why are engineers and the humanities in such agreement here? but again, the sample sizes are so small, I wouldn't spend too much energy on that. So let's talk about using this stuff. I think if we start with our regional interpretation, one of the things that was intriguing to us was, how does the conference program map onto this map? So that as we're going through the conference, we might be able to think about, where are we in this larger structure? I don't know about you folks, I like a road map when I go places, whether it's Africa or driving through the city of Chicago. I'm one of these Garmin fanatics. I like the little GIS thing. So it's helpful for me to have a sense of contextually where I am. So for instance, we did a quick assessment of the program and overlaid it onto this map, just to give you an idea. So this panel, I think we're panel one, right, Holly? This panel we're in right now? I'm not a panel. Okay. So the folks who are going to speak. So the folks who I need to give more time to, who are coming up here, are primarily working on definitions, models, that theoretical piece. Panel two is in the heart of the sandwich there. What are teams all about? Panel three looks like it crosses over, does some measurement and evaluation, some structure and context. Panel four looks like it's trying to do it all or covering it very broadly. So I'll be very interested to hear what panel four is looking at. Panel five, working on team and the support context. Panel six, on the meta issues, both definitional and evaluative. And panel seven, maybe not inappropriately, winding up by considering evaluation and measurement issues. So that's our attempt to look at this. I want to give some thanks to the people who helped organize this project. It was a lot of fun to do. And I hope it made a little contribution. If you want more information, you can find out more about concept mapping at the website for the company that actually licenses this stuff. And you can always write to me if you want information about this talk or raise objections or criticisms or the like. So thank you very much.